at the local high school sports scene. From coaches and athletes to a preview of this week's games. It's the Rudin Report on WICC. Now, your host, Dave Rudin.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Rudin Report Live. I'm Dave Rudin. Buckle up. We got a long show for you today. Get a big cup of coffee going because we're going 90 minutes. We're going overtime today because we got a lot to talk about. Joining me, we got a couple of good guests. We got, first of all, the Staples basketball team, which won its first FCAC title since 1963 on Wednesday night. They're going to be joining us later. I know we're going to have Coach Dave Goldshaw, MVP Adam Udell, Sam Klocko. I think we're going to have one or two other players joining me. That's going to be at the 12 o'clock hour. And people who have been around a couple of years know this guy, Frank Bineski. He and his wife, Frank and Sheila, used to travel the state and go to about 130 games a year. And he probably was the most, not probably, was the most knowledgeable person about state basketball. He could have, as we'll talk about in terms of improving the state tournament, he could have seeded a field himself. Well, anyhow, Frank's not getting down this way. He's still seeing about 60 games a year. Sadly, his wife, Sheila, passed 5 years ago. But anybody that's been around a couple of years knows Frank, and he's going to be kind enough to join us at a little bit, and we're going to go for a while talking about the state playoffs. He's also going to give us a little bit of insight into the team, some of the FCAC teams will be playing. But we're going to start with that Staples championship. It was quite a performance, and it was the one good storyline in a tournament that had very few of them. And helping me break it down, as always, is Mike Walsh. Mike, how you doing?
Great, Dave. Another exciting year of basketball in the FCAC that comes to a conclusion, and a fitting conclusion, to which the best two teams, I thought, were in the finals. And, you know, they gave us a thrilling game. And, you know, Staples, after 63 years, came home with an FCAC championship. It was really a great thing to see as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a coronation. Staples proved, you know, people wondering when Sam Klocko got hurt, what was going to happen. And what we learned is Staples had the best team with Sam Klocko, and Staples had the best team without Sam Klocko. We learned, and I think maybe even Staples learned, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, that they had a deeper team than they realized. It was just some players getting opportunities that they hadn't had before. If we're going to talk about the game, first of all, you won't know this as much. You know about it, Mike, but beginning of the fourth quarter, Staples has a 10-point lead, and first time they have the ball, Adam Udell drives the lane, scores. He hits a pull-up shot in the paint, scores. He scored the first 7 points in the fourth quarter. And I flashed back to last May when he scored 4 goals in 4 minutes and 28 seconds and rallied Staples from a 3-goal deficit to a 7-6 win over Darien for the school's first FCAC championship in lacrosse. And this was the boys lacrosse final on hardwood. Adam Udell, no team, and I thought this in the regular season, and it really became crystallized over the final week during the postseason. The reason that Staples was different than everybody else is they had a player that nobody else did, and they had that kind of player that is much better than the average. I called him a unicorn. He was good for could go for a triple-double any night. Came close to doing it most nights, and he just stepped up and with a championship on the line, finished with 24 points, 11 assists, and 6 rebounds, and kind of put the team on his shoulders in the fourth quarter.
There's no question about that. And I think the thing that it shows both in lacrosse and obviously in the FCAC basketball championship is that Adam Udell is a winner, and he's going to make the people around him a winner. And as you say, I don't know if anybody else has that kind of player. And he knew what he had to do in certain situations. Even in that third quarter when Humphrey made a three to make it 38-34, he came back and hit Matt Corgan for two consecutive threes, which put the lead back up to 10 or 11 points. He just knows what has to be done in a certain situation. As you say, in the fourth quarter, he had the first 7 points. And I think you gave me a stat where he assisted or scored on a great percentage of all Staples baskets.
That's where I was going to go right next here. First of all, in the fourth quarter alone, he had 14 points and three assists. This has got to be one of the most impressive stats in FCAC playoff history. Going towards the end of the third quarter, he had a role, whether he either scored or had an assist, on their final 29 points of the game.
Wow, that's incredible. He knew what had to be done, and he went out and he did it. And credit to the rest of the Staples team. They were able to execute off of what he was giving them the passes. Matt Corrigan, who I didn't know a lot about, and when I watched a lot of Staples games, he wasn't very prominent. But once Sam went down, he really stepped up big time. He hit some threes. One of them, I thought he was almost out of bounds, and he hit it. And he had some confidence going for him, and that was huge. Tobias gave his usual great game. And the thing that we keep talking about, and I think we all both talked about in the beginning of the year, was their defense. They played excellent defense. I mean, Richfield had to work for everything they got. And, I think that's what carried them along with, their offensive prowess to the championship.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. They found out that they were a deeper team. They didn't have to. A lot of these guys, Dylan Lohman, Matt Corrigan, Austin Heyer, it ran deep. Tobias doing a little bit more on offense. They had it in them. I think they were deferential to Sam Klacko, and I'd be deferential to Sam Klacko too. But now they were forced. They couldn't be deferential anymore to Klacko. And a different player stepped up. It wasn't always the same player. It was Lohman a lot of nights. The semifinals and the finals, it was Corrigan. And Corrigan jump-started them in both the semifinals and the finals with a bunch of third-quarter three-pointers. And he stepped up with 19 points and sort of had his coming-out party. And I read you this yesterday. I texted. We talked at the beginning or early in the year where I said a coach said that, to beat Staples, he really thought you had to stop Udell first and not Klacko. And I actually texted, and it was Danny Melzer, the new Canaan coach, and he said he texted me, and I couldn't put this any better about Udell. He texted. He said, he's a winner. He's a leader. He impacts the game on both ends of the floor. He's tough. He's smart. He's everything you could ask for in a high school basketball player. It comes down to it's easier to replace a 20-point scorer, and that's not taking anything away from Sam Klacko. I'm talking about in the sport. It's easier to replace a 20-point scorer than it is somebody who sees the floor like that and can – get involved and can score. And like I said, it's harder to find a triple-double guy. And I didn't appreciate it as much. They had a press table, and I was on one of the baselines. I was in the corner, and I was at the basket Staples was shooting at in the second half. But I had a highlight video made up for me. I mean, the passes that Udell were making were just unbelievable. They were, from the top of the three-point circle, he was finding guys in the corner. He just has such good court vision. And again, it's impossible to just replicate that.
There's no question he was the most valuable player. I don't know if it's easy to find 20-point scorers, but he was able to set up And Staples has some other guys that can, you know, fill the void, like Corrigan stepping up and other nights Lohman stepping up. And
that's what I meant. You don't need one 20-point scorer. You can make up those 20 points with, you know, with a bunch of guys. And it was, you know, Bowman scoring 6, Corrigan scoring 19, Lohman 6. They found each night that they were able to make up those points from a few different players. And it didn't have to be one player, and it didn't have to be the same guy every night. And it's made easier when you play defense the way they do.
No, exactly. And that's the point I was going to get to, the defense. I think last week you had on Matt Tobias, and he's talking about one of the other players that was very good offensively. I think it was Lohman. And he, you know, was wondering why he wasn't starting or getting more time. And Golshaw said, you get on the floor when you play defense. Otherwise, you're not going to get on the floor. And his defense picked up, and I think the whole team realized that. You know, we can play with anybody offensively, but, you know, we have to be good defensively. And they were. I thought the defense was excellent. They held Peter Stefanski for Richfield to 5 points. I don't think too many people did that, especially down the stretch.
He only took 4 shots, and they held Hickey to 6-for-20 shooting. He did get his 17 points. I'm sorry, his 20 points, but he had to work for them.
No, he had 17 points. You're right about that. But he took 20 shots, and you know they you know every one was a contested tough shot. So
yeah, it's weird. I'm looking at Staples' box score, and they have him with 20 points. The box score at the game had him with 17. So I'm not sure where the mistake came.
Well, you know,
whatever it was,
they played really good defense.
Yeah, and they, you know, I think people were waiting for them to make a run, and it never came. The last few minutes, like I said, this was not the Ridgefield team that we've seen in the last few years. It was a good Ridgefield team. Like I said, for that team to only lose once during the regular season was an incredible accomplishment, and it the only loss was to Staples, but it was a tournament. Staples rolled by 22 points in the quarterfinals, 10 in the semis, and 10 in the finals, and we'll talk about that maybe for a few more minutes after, but we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to segue from the FCAC to the state playoffs, and we'll be joined by Frank Bineski. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
Teams, athletes, coaches, and everything that makes local high school sports great. Now, back to the Rudin Report on WICC with Dave Rudin.
All right, we're back, and we're going to take a little jump for a little while from the FCAC to the state playoffs. If you've been around for a few years, you're certainly going to know my guest here. I don't even know how to explain it to people who, you know, players right now probably don't know who he is. He hasn't been down in FCAC parts for a little bit, but whenever Frank and Sheila Bineski showed up at games, they're always on the side of the bleachers facing the benches. They're in the first row, and they went to 120, 130 games a year, and they knew every team. They knew every referee. Coaches would go up to them and try to find the latest, get some feedback. I used to go up to them because I vote in the state poll, and I don't get to see teams during the regular season too much outside the FCAC, and I would talk to them so I could make an educated vote. But I always said, and we're going to talk about it a little bit with him now, but if we got the proper kind of state tournament and we had the 16 best teams, this person could have seeded it himself, and nobody would have questioned it because, A, he had the knowledge, and, B, everybody knows that he didn't have a partisan bone in his body. And he's joining us right now, Frank Bineski. Frank, how you doing?
Very good, Dave. Nice to be here.
Nope, it's nice. I'll let you say quickly, hi quickly to Mike because you haven't talked to him in a while.
Frank, how you doing? It's great to hear your voice. And as I say, I remember those great old days, and it was great to see you at basketball games. And I was fortunate enough to go to a few state finals and to see you there. You know, it's great to hear you're back out watching a lot of games and give us some information on the state tournament.
Well, thanks, Mike. It's good to talk to you. I did get down to Sacred Heart to see the Fairfield Notre Dame prep St. Bernard's game, and I thought I might see you there, but I guess you don't get out.
You'll never see Mike at a game anymore. Not unless you want to go to his house and watch a stream of the game, and I know he'd love to have
you. Well, that's a big loss.
If I knew you were there, Frank, I might have gone. But the live stream is pretty easy to see, and you get a lot of good views that way. But as I say, you get to see these games, and you can tell us a little bit about this state tournament.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do what I can.
Okay, well, first of all, I just wanted to talk about the state tournament and how it is and how we think we can, if we can improve it. You know, it just to me it's the worst tournament that I could think of on any level, and this is why, and it's for a simple reason. The only reason we do Division 1 through 5 and not by classes is they want to get the best 16 teams ostensibly into a field and have a real basketball champion, and a lot of that has to do with having schools of choice involved. But we see this every year. There's no way to have the 16 best teams decided at the beginning of the season. And I just looked up before this show. Right now, if you go by the state poll, and just maybe right now that's the most closest to the best way to get the top 16, you have four teams right now, Manchester, New London, Hillhouse, and Bloomfield, who are not in Division One but Division Two. You have Ellington, which is in Division 4, and you have Shepock Valley in Division 5. So, Frank, I'm curious your thoughts on it. I just think, first of all, I think to get the best 16, you can't decide it at the beginning of the season who the 16 will be.
Well, I go back to the days when enrollment was the only criteria, and clearly that didn't do it for us. And so over time, people added the factors of school of choice, success in tournament with a three-year look back, the strength of the league. And I think what they tried to do was cover the most measurable, predictable variables. And I think they've done a good job of doing that and trying to have factors that you can see before the end of the year and load up the tournament, the 16, that way. I think it would be a disservice for teams that have good records to suddenly at the end of the season be projected up into the Division One category and suddenly have to meet the competition that they never predicted they would be seeing. So I'm not in favor of doing that. The one thing that I would criticize about is I think they probably should have gone beyond 16 teams. I think 24 teams would have probably been a better a group to deal with. So
no, I don't disagree with you, because you look at, you're going to have three teams that are under 500 that are going to be playing. So basically, you only have to win four games to win a championship. And if you get a team that's under 500, in a sense, unless something really shocking happened, you really only have to win three. But, you know, to me, the best example is when Donovan Klingon was at Bristol Central. And the year he was a senior, They were a Division II team, and they bumped him up to Division I after he graduated, and the whole team graduated, and they had it backwards. So I think we're talking about why did they have to do it at the beginning of the year if you're going to have the top 16? Can't we find a way? If you win Division I now, or if you win Division II, what are you the best of? You're not the best of the best because you didn't have all the best teams in the field. Isn't there a way that we could try to find a fair way to seed the tournament, or at least not, if not seed it, at least have the top teams in there and determine those, and then go to, if you want to go by one loss record like they do everywhere, I think that's the fairest way, and I don't disagree. I'm not at all against going to 24, or even if you want to go to 32 and not have any buys, but really have a real team, a field where you know all the best teams. Danbury's not one of the best teams there under 500. Same with Stanford, just from the FCAC. If we did the tournament and determined the field now, they wouldn't be there, and we would have teams like Manchester and New London and Hill House and Bloomfield who belong there. We would have them there.
Well, I know I talked to Coach Bach at the CCC finals, and he was there, of course, to watch Northwest Catholic do their thing. And it was not a happy prospect to be facing them in the first round of the tournament by any means. Like I say, I think you still need to have factors that come into play at the beginning of the season, and unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't always work out.
Why do we have to have it at the beginning of the season?
I think it would be unfair for a team. I'm sure Coach Reiser at Manchester would be apoplectic if he found out that because of his excellent record during this year, that he's now going to be jumped into Division I for tournament time. But I just think that's unfair.
But you would have these. What I would do is you would have after you've seed this, then you go back to everybody else is in their class size. You know you're going to start the season LLMS. They want to have five tournaments. But if you don't make the Division I tournament, then you go to your class size.
Well, can I just interject one thing on my thoughts on this? First of all, I think the Division I tournament, if you want to set it up back in April, that's one thing. But things change so much between April. I mean, just an example, East Catholic got a transfer, which I love the name, Sincere Folk, which made them a lot better. And that's not just an example, but I really think that if you could wait until the end of the year, two things: wait till the end of the year to make your decision for the top 16 teams, and two, if you don't have a 500 record, you shouldn't be in Division I. Which would eliminate, in this case, I think three teams. And then the three top teams from Division II, based on power points, if you want to go that way, would move up into Division I, which would give you the best 16 teams. I hate to go back to the years of 2003 and 4 when they did that, where the power points and who you beat and the power conferences, et cetera, were the criteria for setting up Division 1, 2, 3, and 4. Again, I don't know why we changed that. Well, I do know why we changed that.
Because Ridgefield threw a game at the end of the year so they wouldn't get in.
Well, there's ways to handle that. And,
hey, we need to take a break here, and then we'll pick it right up. We just got to take a commercial break. Frank, we'll be right back with you, too. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
He knows everything you need to know about local high school sports. Back to the Rudin Report with Dave Rudin on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back, and we've got Frank Vineski still on with us. Frank, yep. Here, let me know your thoughts on this. This would be my ideal solution then for it. They offered the girls a chance to go to this kind of format, and the girls said no. They wanted to stick to double LL and by class size. Why don't we just go back and do it that way with the boys and figure out a fair way to handle schools of choice if that is going to be the biggest issue? And that way, if you win the championship, you know what you're the best of. I just don't know right now what you're the best of if you win a state title.
Well, I am a fan of the current format. I really am. I am a fan of the format, and Mohegan Sun, I think, is a dream come true. To be able to see all 10 games in a couple of days is great. I think the through the years there's been a critique of the basketball tournament and the fact that so many Catholic schools seem to have their way. And what this current format on the boys' side does is almost, many people have said, why don't we have a separate tournament for the Catholic schools? And with Division I, it almost is there. So I like the current format. So that's me.
Yeah, I love Mohegan Sun too. I haven't heard one person who doesn't like Mohegan Sun. It's the perfect venue. It's just great. I think where I guess Mike and I and you are in disagreement are in terms of you're an advocate of having the 16 teams before the season, and I guess we think you can't have the best 16 until you do it after you see what everybody has.
Well, can I just say that I don't disagree with setting the, I think I said it before, the 16 teams prior, but I think they should be held to the same standard as the rest of the teams in that they should win at least 8 of their 20 games to qualify to be in that tournament. Now, if that reduces it to 14 teams, then, you fill in with the top teams from Division II. Now, if I was Manchester, I know you said Frankie would be disappointed getting out of Division II. I can't believe that because, he's beaten Windsor twice. I mean, he's got a tremendous team. I'd want to show I'm the best. It's like Staples. Staples opted to go up to Division I. And I think this way you avoid a situation where you have West Hill with no wins playing East Catholic in the first round of a tournament. So it's just you have to have at least 8 wins to be in the Division I tournament, just like 2, 3, 4, and 5. I also think 5 divisions, by the way, is just too much. There's a total of 18 byes among the teams in the first round. That's not including the 8 byes in Division I. So, 26 byes is a little bit too much. But again, that's just my thoughts on it. I don't disagree with setting it ahead of time, if that's the way you feel it has to be. But again, tweak it just a little bit so that we get the best, 16 teams into that Division I tournament. And as far as Mohegan Sun, I was fortunate to be there several times, and it's a great, great venue. Although I did like Central Connecticut because we were there, I think, 7 years in a row. And just being in the state finals is something really, really special. And, that's the end result. I think it's getting to the end result. That we have to tweak it just a little bit. I don't think a whole big thing is necessary, but that's my opinion, and I agree, with that tweak. So, Frank, you're the guy on top of everything. You know what's going on. If we can just segue away a little bit and give us some thoughts on some of the teams you've seen this year. And
yeah, that's where I was going to go next here. The other reason I wanted Frank on is to give a little bit of a breakdown on some of the teams that FCAC teams could be seeing.
Absolutely.
And I know the team, the highest seeded team in Division One is Staples. They're the 4 seed. They're going to play Colby in the first round, the 13 seed. Assuming they win, they would play the 5-12 winner. And if form holds, it would be a rematch against St. Bernard. I know you've seen St. Bernard some.
I have. They are an excellent team. I think their biggest problem is they probably only go really 5 deep.
That's a perfect Mike Walsh team, by the way. That's my Mike Walsh dream team. You don't have to substitute.
Sheila and I have spent many days in the Trinity Catholic gym, and we know Mike's subbing policy very, very well. You're right. they are good. Staples now is without their big gun, Klitschko. Is that right?
Yeah, Sam Klitschko. He's got a broken wrist, so they've been using some other players there. It's been a tough loss for them.
Well, I was surprised that they won the FCAC, and more power to them. That's a huge win for them.
They found out they have quality depth that they didn't realize they had because they hadn't had to use it before. A whole bunch of different guys stepped up there. Ridgefield opens with East Catholic in the 8-9 game. Their home. That's a tough matchup.
That is a game I would love to see. I don't think I'm going to see it, but I would love to see it. I'm a big Andrew McClellan fan. I think he's an excellent coach, and I know he prepares well. And I'm also a big Luke Riley fan, and I think that will be maybe the best tussle there is in Division One. Sadly, for me, it's in Ridgefield, not at East Catholic, so I don't think I'm going to make it. But
what about East Catholic? Tell us a little bit about them.
East Catholic, Mike mentioned Sincere Folk coming in there, and he's really been a fine addition for that club. Sincere is a slasher. They started out the season, I think, needing to make some fairly major adjustments. You know, the Samson Riley was there last year, and all of a sudden he wasn't there, and the offense had to come from a bunch of different people. And I think over time Luke went further down in his roster, used more people, and I think they have come to the point now where they pretty much understand that everybody's got a share in the scoring burden, and that seems to be happening. The one unfortunate part, I think, they have a big guy, Braden Jones, who's very good, but has not produced in some big games, and I think he needs to do that, especially against Ridgefield.
Okay, why don't we take a break here, Frank? Can you stick around with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to come back with Frank Bineski and talk a little bit more about some of the other teams in the field. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
Fall high school sports lives right here on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut. Now, back to the Rudin Report and your host, Dave Rudin.
Back, and we're going to finish up to the top of the hour with Frank Bineski. Frank, who do you like in Division One? First of all, is there a sleeper? Is there a team maybe not in the top four or so that you think could win a game or two?
I think the top four are probably going to be among the winners. Yeah, you know, most people crown Notre Dame of West Haven out of hand, but I think they can be beaten. I think they can be beaten. I'm not sure that they will be beaten, but I think they can be beaten. If you go down the list, I wouldn't count out East Catholic or Windsor from this end of the state, only because they have losses, but they've had them against each other. The five teams in the top 10 from this area, Bloomfield, Windsor, Northwest, Manchester, and East, have sort of beat up on each other. And it's kind of like the girls' soccer in the FCAC is. Don't count anybody out because they've played good competition all year long. And I think that's kind of what you have with the CCC up here.
I like that analogy with FCAC girls soccer. That's
that trophy shelf is full. I know.
Frank, you don't see it then as the Notre Dame of West Haven Invitational.
Yeah,
right?
That's what everybody down here is calling.
I do not. You remember they were a pretty hot commodity last year as well, and that St. Bernard's Notre Dame game was a heck of a ball game.
It was the semifinal too, right? With Notre Dame Prep.
Yes, absolutely.
The semifinals was overtime, I think.
I saw that one too.
Yes. You guys have both seen them, and because they play Stanford, and it's Mike's old coaching cohort, Brian Krifcher. What about Notre Dame Prep and how far can they go?
I was surprised at the lack of height for Notre Dame Prep. I mean, St. Bernard's did a job on him for three quarters in the Sacred Heart game, and they were up by 22, and St. Bernard's lost all of that lead plus two. I mean, as luck would have it, Manguel scored the three-pointer at the buzzer to win the game, but I was shocked at how well Notre Dame Prep came back. And the way they did it was driving, scoring, slashing in there, scoring on layups, and almost every time got fouled, and it was a three-point play. It was unbelievable.
Division One to me is wide open. If you think that Notre Dame of West Haven can be beat, and obviously John Mirabella, I think is if not the top coach, one of the top coaches in the state of Connecticut. And
he's a great guy.
He's done a great job with that team. So I think he has a shot just from watching live streams. And, congratulations to Ken Smith on number 700. That's
absolutely
an accomplishment. And the job he does at Windsor.
And you know what? That Windsor team, very young. They're led by two sophomores and a freshman. And they've played some outstanding games. They got beat twice by Manchester after leading by 25 and 18 and blowing both of those leads, but they finally got them in the league tournament.
Let's take a real quick look. I don't think the FCAC is going to fare real well in Division II. The two top teams in terms of seeds are Fairfield Ward, which is 13th, and they're going to open against Trumbull tomorrow, and Greenwich, which first has to go to Hall, but if Ward wins, they could play Hill House. If Greenwich wins, they're going to have to play Manchester.
Correct.
Is there anybody? Is Manchester, I guess, is considered the favorite, but there are a bunch of other strong teams. What do you like in Division Two?
Well, I do like Manchester, but I think you always have to worry about Hill House. Hill House never goes away. And then there's Glastonbury, there's Southington. Those are not bad clubs from up this end of the state. But I if I had to bet the house, it would be on either Manchester or Hill House.
Well, Frank, I'll tell you what. I'll make a deal with you. If form holds and we have Thursday night Staples and St. Bernard, there are a lot of good restaurants in Westport. If you want to, last time I saw you, we got to sit together for both state semifinal games last year at the University of Hartford. If you make the trip to Westport, I will take you out to whatever kind of food you like. There's a good restaurant in Westport. You take the ride down, and I'll take you out.
That sounds like a deal.
Well, Frank,
I accept.
Frank,
I might even show up myself then. I don't know.
That might be the one thing that could get Walsh out of his house.
Well, Mike, I hope you're well. It's so good to talk to you.
Frank, I don't know.
Great talking to you, Frank.
We talk basketball. There's nobody more respected in the state than you, and that's why I wanted to have you on. And I hope if you don't make it to Westport, I hope one of the FCAC teams has a long enough run and I get a chance to see you, because I miss seeing you. But thanks so much for taking the time here with us, and enjoy the state playoffs.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me. Thank you so much.
Okay, that was Frank Bineski. And Mike, he could have seeded the tournament himself back in the day.
He could seed the tournament right now by himself. He still sees an awful lot of games. And as you could tell, he has knowledge on a lot of the teams. And, great person. And somebody that in all my years of coaching that I really enjoyed seeing and being with, and respecting him and feeling for him when he lost his wife, a great man.
Yeah, like I said, if Frank and Sheila were at the game, or if Frank's at the game now, you know, it's the biggest game of the day. And it's just funny. You would watch, and I would go up and talk to them always for 5 or so minutes and get the lowdown on who I should be voting for in the state poll. Both coaches would go over and talk to him. The referees would go over and talk to him, and they knew each other on a first name basis. So it just, I miss seeing him. And hopefully, I really hope that we're going to have an FCAC team that's going to make a deep enough run. You know,
I think that Ludlow has a shot.
That's just right. We're on the same wavelength. If there's a team that's going to get me to Mohegan Sun, I would think it's most likely to be Fairfield Ludlow.
Right, I agree with you, and I think the long shot is Bridgeport Central.
You're all on Bridgeport. That's the game you're looking for, is Bridgeport Central Ellington. You want that game more than any game in the tournament.
Bridgeport Central with 1,800 students could end up playing Ellington with 700 students in the Division IV setup, the way they have it. But anyway, that was my choice there.
Yep. We're going to take a break. We're going. Don't go away anybody, we're going to come back, and we go in another half hour. Mike and I will go for a few more minutes, and then we'll have the Staples boys basketball team joining us. You're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
A look at the local high school sports scene, from coaches and athletes to a preview of this week's games. It's the Rudin Report on WICC. Now, your host, Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back, and we got another half hour to go. Mike, let's tie the bow here before I talk to the Staples crew. They're not thinking about it yet. They got the state playoffs to come up, but I said to Dave Goldshore, whatever was going to happen with the FCAC tournament, turning a real negative into a positive, they're going to be a tough team next year with now that these other guys have some more big game experience. Obviously, replacing Udell is going to be a seismic loss, but all these other guys have experience now, and they're going to have a very solid point guard, not the same kind of point guard in Austin Hire. They're going to be the preseason favorite.
Well, I think you're right, but I think the other thing that's going to happen is that Richfield is going to be right there with them. You know, the two of them are going to, you know, I think
Spakowski and Hickey graduate. But they'll
stop. They lose Hickey and the big guy, but they come up with, you know, a couple of the other kids, Humphreys and Wainwright, I think, is
They got a bunch of players, but I think they're going to be not knowing what was going to happen for the rest of the FCAC, it was going to make them a better team for next year. And you know, bottom line is they had the talent there all along. They just didn't have to show it until the very end.
No, you're right, and they certainly did show it. I was really happy with the fact that 2,200 fans showed up at Fairfield University to watch Staples claim their first title.
Yeah, it was a nice venue. It was, you know, a tournament where the semifinal games and the final were all 10-point games, so we didn't get a lot of drama, but the Staples storyline, I think, made up for that. Well, Mike, I kept you a little bit long here, so I'm gonna give you the rest of the 20 minutes off, and you can listen. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to have Rutgers coach Dave Goldshaw and a bunch of his players. So, Mike, thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Okay, you're listening to the Rudin Report live on WICC.
Teams, athletes, coaches, and everything that makes local high school sports great. Now, back to the Rudin Report on WICC with Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back, and to finish up the show here, you win your first state champion or FCAC championship in 62 years. I'm ready to hang an extra half hour and talk about it. And joining me right now, the coach of the Rutgers, Dave Goldshaw, and I believe we have Adam Udell, Sam Klacko, Dylan Lohman, and Matt Corrigan. Guys, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
I'm doing all right. Probably not as well as you guys. I hope nobody there has had to pay for anything in Westport, that you guys have been getting your breakfast at Sherwood Diner. And, Dave, I hope you've been getting your dinners paid for by the town restaurants.
Well, not yet, but Gaetano's is asking us to come over for some lunch today. So far, so good.
Okay, well, let's send everybody over there to get autographs. Dave, first of all, you've had a little time to digest it, and I saw you after the game, and you were a melting pot of emotions, the thrill of winning the championship. I know it was a lot for you, because last year, the championship game, your father passed away the day of the game. You had a whole lot going through your mind. Now that you've had a little bit of time to digest it, what are you thinking?
Dave, it's been incredible. You know, last year was very emotional for me, obviously, for those reasons. But go through what we went through during the year and to bounce back and handle the loss of, you know, a first-team All-FCAC player, and be able to accomplish what we accomplished was very special for the school, the town, and the program.
You had played Ridgefield a week before and had beaten them up there. That's not an easy thing to do. It's become a great rivalry. What was the game plan coming in? Was it just it looked to me, just watching you, it was just kind of like business as usual. Do it, just execute and you'll be okay.
I mean, you know, it's always hard to beat a team like Richfield twice in a week. And, you know, I thought we played almost a perfect game offensively up there a week and a half ago. So I obviously knew or expected that was not going to be the same. But we, stuck to our core principles and our fundamentals. And if we could do that, good things tend to happen. And they did on Wednesday night.
What was the mood when you found out that, and we talked a little bit that day, when you found out that, that Sam had a broken wrist and was going to be out for the year? A lot of, I know the talk I heard was just the ripple effect was, you know, what a shame. Staples really had a good chance to win a title this year and kind of dismissed the team's chances. But as we found out, you have a lot of talented players that maybe they didn't even know, or certainly the league followers didn't know could step up like they did. What were your thoughts? Obviously, the disappointment for Sam being the overriding one.
Yeah, I mean, it was an emotional day because that was the day that we found out that he wasn't going to play the rest of the year. It was the first Ridgefield game. So, you know, we had a team meeting and we talked about it, and there were tears and there were hugs. It was very emotional for all of us. But I think the theme was next man up and move forward, and there's no other choice that we have.
And you had a lot of next man up. You know, we'll bounce around with a couple of the players. First, and I asked, it's probably the first question I asked you after the game, but and you and I were both there, and you watched Adam Udell at the start of the fourth quarter, and he looked like he was ready to take over the game, and I just flashed back. It looked exactly like the end of the FCAC lacrosse championship back in May, where Staples was down 6-3, and in the 4 minutes and 28 seconds, he scores four goals, including the wild. The overtime looked like the last scene of Hoosiers, if lacrosse could be basketball. You know, take the face off and just go one-on-one and score. I know nobody was surprised. Certainly you weren't, but what is it about Adam in terms of big spots?
Yeah, I mean, I've been able to coach him for a while now. I've known him since he was five, and, he's just a winner. You know, it kind of started for me the day that he made that steal against Ward in the semifinal state game. And, I think that kind of gave him a lot of confidence as an athlete, which obviously translated to the lacrosse field with two great years and obviously what he did in the championship game. I think that obviously him being so tight with Sam and the injury with Sam, I think he kind of, just put it on his shoulders a little bit, not only to do it for the team, but to do it for Sam, because Sam has given obviously so much to this program and it was a huge loss. But the kid's just a winner, and it's an honor to be able to coach him, and this program's going to miss him for sure.
All right, Adam, take me, you're coming out onto the court for the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
You just sort of take over the game there. And I know you stay within yourself and you don't average as many assists as you do if you're not a team player, but was it just like you kind of felt like a senior leader, you had to kind of step up a little bit more?
Coming onto the court, I think we were up 10 points going in the fourth. I wasn't really thinking about that. I was thinking, how can we just win this game and come away with the ring? And they were giving me a lot of room and space, and I was feeling good in the second half with my shot. They were just falling. I wasn't really thinking about it too much like that, but they were giving me shots because my teammates were knocking down their own shots. So they had to give me space, and it just worked out.
Yeah, I thought about it. Was there any part of you in the fourth quarter that's thinking about the lacrosse final?
No, not even for a second. It's going
to be honest. I think so. Talk a little, and I don't know how you describe it because it's the kind of thing that comes natural for a player, but some of those passes you just look at and getting the ball to guys for real open looks, how are you able to see the court the way you do?
I mean, my teammates make it really easy. If you watch them play off ball, which is something that we focus on every single day, they are working together to get open. So I know these are the same looks that I see in practice every single day. So when I get to my spot, I either have my own shot or I got a guy cutting or someone fading for three, and they're always open, and they work hard to get open, and that's how it's able to happen.
Everybody that plays lacrosse, and I've learned the sport a lot in the last decade, So, you know, talk about it has so many elements comparable to basketball. Is playing the two sports help you to be better in both sports?
Yeah, 100%. I think, especially as my role in both sports has been facilitating before shooting. I'm more of a passer. So I think that's allowed me to find teammates and to get them involved in both sports.
What was your feeling? You and Sam are best friends. What were your thoughts first when you found out the severity of the injury, and then in terms of playing without him for the final four games?
I mean, it was a really hard moment for me, honestly. I was super upset because, I mean, obviously he's the best player on our team, but he was a really good leader, and he got the guys going. So it was really hard to hear that news, and I was definitely really upset. But we had a big game that night versus Ridgefield, and at the end of the day, like, we got to come away with that game. We needed to win it. So while it hurt for a couple hours, once it became game time, I wasn't trying to think about it too much. I was more thinking about the game. But it really sucks that I don't get to play with him ever again.
Sam, you aren't on the court, unfortunately, but Staples doesn't win a championship without all that you did, and until you unfortunately suffered the injury. What? First of all, most importantly, how are you feeling, and what's going on with your wrist?
I'm feeling good. I'm stuck in a cast for a couple more weeks, but I'm recovering.
What was it like for you? I'm sure it had to be really tough not being able to play, but what was it like just in terms of watching what the team did?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I was really bummed out that I was out for the year, but at the end of the day, I'm still a captain, so I still have to be there for my teammates. And I honestly had just as much fun cheering them on from the bench as I would if I was on the court.
Everybody I spoke to, and you look at the guys who had to and did step up in your place, talked about how playing with you and how having to guard you in practice made them a better player. What were your thoughts just in terms of the guys who are going to have to make up the points and rebounds and assists? You know, we don't give you enough credit maybe because you're a complete player as well, but what were your thoughts? What did you know that we didn't about some of the guys that you're sitting with right now who had to step up?
Yeah, I mean, obviously for people on the outside, it was definitely more of a surprise, but I was very confident. Everyone on my team was very confident that those guys would step up because they all worked really hard in practice, you know, in the off season, going to early morning shoot around, going to lift. So I was not surprised at all that they were all able to step up.
Well, you weren't on the court, but you were every bit as much, had as big a role in the championship as everybody else. Matt Corrigan, I don't know if I'll say coming out party because you had a good season, but you really had to step up, and you did it in the semifinals and the championship game where you scored 19 points. Both the semis and the finals, you really helped ignite the team in the third quarter, hitting a bunch of 3-point shots. First of all, did you kind of, all you guys that had to play more minutes and score a little bit, did you kind of feel that it was incumbent on you to play that kind of role for the team to be successful?
I guess so. But, like, when Sam's playing, like, he takes a lot of shots, and we all trust him to do that. So we all just knew that we had to step up.
Did you kind of feel like you had more pressure on you than maybe you did earlier in the year?
Not really. I feel like my role changed, I feel like, when Sam's got hurt, but it's the same pressure.
What's it like? I mean, you were feeling it from the corner. You took a bunch of those shots right in front of where I was sitting, and it doesn't hurt when the looks are pretty open, when you have Adam drawing the defense and getting you the ball.
It is pretty easy, honestly. Like, I run, like, I just have to find my spots, and Adam is really good at finding, like, me and Phil and
Dylan. You really stepped up as well. You're when you're hot there's it's very hard to stop you. What about you had had a good regular season too up until Sam got injured, but you were another one of the players that kind of had to do a little bit more. What was your feeling when you found out about Sam and in terms of what you were going to have to do?
I think like Sam makes up a lot of our offense and a lot of our points, but I felt that it was definitely a big opportunity for me to get more shots. And I trust myself, and the team trusts me too. So once I got the shots, there was no like fear or concern. And you know, Adam does a really good job of like creating shots for me, and that helped a lot.
You get so hot when you're hot. I mean, I don't know how many games I've seen you hit 6-7 threes. What's it like when you get on one of those rolls?
I think the biggest thing is that, like, feeding the hot hand, keeping that momentum. I think when we play with momentum, nobody can stop us. And when I hit 2 or 3 in a row, it just keeps, like, that. There's that confidence. And it brings a really good energy to the rest of the team to help us keep succeeding and get wins.
Do you and Matt, I said, I think this is, while you guys have paid so heavy dividends this year, I think having to play these extra minutes and with the pressure is going to make the team even better next year. Do you guys kind of feel like, hopefully you're going to have a long run in the state playoffs first, but you guys are going to be even better prepared for next season having to play these roles this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now we're really just focused on the next game. We're not really focused on next year yet, but we always have confidence in this group of guys that we can get it done in whatever position we're put in.
Yeah, I agree.
Dave, 3 years, you've been to the final 3 times. I don't know if anybody's batted 1,000 in their first 3 years, but what's been the key to the success of the program since you took over?
I think it really started with our ability to start really focusing on the defensive side of the ball. And, I'm just proud of our commitment to playing hard on that side. And then adopting the core values that we have. I feel like they've done a great job of it, starting with Chris and Cody and Charlie and Gavin and all those guys. And then they've done a great job mentoring the younger kids at that point, which was like Sam and Adam and Mason. And now Sam and Adam and Mason have done a great job mentoring, obviously, Maddie, who's coming from Ward, and now Dylan and Austin and other guys. So it's really just a process and like almost like a brotherhood where they go through that family and where their role is.
Yeah, and he's not here. So Mason Tobias, who had a great regular season, really, really stepped up as well and gave you a little bit more points. Well, guys, congratulations. I got to cover you a lot. I know how much effort was put into it. It was fun seeing the joy that you guys all had. And I'm going to come see you on Tuesday night for your start of hopefully a long state playoff run when you play Colby. Thanks a lot, guys, for taking the time here, and congratulations and best of luck the rest of the way.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot,
Dan.
Appreciate
you
for having us.
Okay, and thanks. That's the end of our Marathon Rudin Report live show. Again, thanks to the Staples team for joining us. Thanks to Frank Bineski. Thanks again to my co-host, Mike Walsh. And we'll be back next week with a little bit of state playoff talk. Have a good week, everybody.